Hello and welcome to episode 92 of the Tech Reformation, where the world of technology meets the worldview of Christianity. I'm Ben.
I'm Derek.
And this is Tank.
This week we're talking about, is technology magic? A new study says people think atheists are bad, and the subscription payment model. Without further ado, let's get started.
All right, Ben, what do you have to talk about this week?
Okay, are you guys familiar with Arthur C. Clarke's third law?
Probably. I just don't have it in my head at the moment.
No. Although I did whenever I read
it. You're not? I'm surprised.
I'm with Derek. I recognized it when I read that article a couple weeks ago.
Any sufficiently advanced technology is indistinguishable from magic. So here's my question for you guys. I've been thinking about this for a while now, just because I know that law. You know, it's kind of like the three laws of robots, you know, where they can't kill humans and all that stuff. That was an attempt at a joke that clearly was not funny. Hopefully somebody out there is listening and laughed. At least my wife will laugh. Anyway, I've been thinking about this, and I just wonder, is technology magic, guys?
If you're asking whether technology is actually magic, is that your question?
Is technology magic, Derek? Yes or no? Please choose A, yes, or B, no.
Technology is not actually magic.
Tank?
But it can be perceived, possibly. I don't know.
So, I Googled define magic.
Wait, let me do that. You're right, okay. Tank. We need to define our terms. What is magic? Let's ask Google. Magic.
Magic
the Gathering. No, not Magic the Gathering.
Yes, that is a form of technology.
Define magic. Okay, so there's this funny thing about words where they don't actually mean things unless you use them in a context, and then you can use the same word in multiple contexts, and they mean different things. This is like the craziest thing ever.
It's like magic.
It's kind of like magic. It's super helpful for when you're reading your Bible and you think that law means law means law means law, or all means all means all means all. But as any good Calvinist knows, we all use all the time, and we don't always mean all. Like, I just used all four times in one sentence, and I meant a different thing every time I used it. Anyway, words have meanings, and the meanings of words are defined by their context. So Google always gives multiple definitions for a word. So here's a couple of definitions for magic. Magic, as a noun, the power of apparently influencing the course of events by using mysterious or supernatural forces. As in, do you believe in magic? Synonyms: sorcery, witchcraft, wizardry, necromancy, enchantment, voodoo, hoodoo, mojo, shamanism, occultism, black magic, the black arts. I think that's enough synonyms.
I love
for
how
now.
You just kept going with that list.
So is technology magic in the sense of sorcery or witchcraft?
Well, if it was, then we wouldn't be allowed to use it with, you know, what the Bible says about witchcraft and all of that.
Yes, you're absolutely right. And I think this is getting to the actual point of Arthur Clarke's law. It's perceived to be magic.
Yes.
Which is one of the other forms of the way Google defines magic. Used in magic or working by magic, having or apparently having supernatural powers. Like a magic wand, synonyms supernatural, enchanted, for example, or a magic spell. Mm-hmm. And then finally, informal, wonderful, or exciting. What a magic moment. Synonyms fascinating, captivating, charming, glamorous, magical, enchanting, entrancing, spellbinding, magnetic, irresistible, hypnotic. Have you guys heard of magic grace? Get it? Irresistible grace.
Oh my goodness. that's pretty great. Magic grace. That's
all right,
gonna be
joking
the title.
Aside, joking aside. I guess the point of the whole thing is that basically when we don't understand what it's doing and yet it still accomplishes the purpose for which it was designed and like what we want it to do. So like when I tell Alexa, never mind. I have one on my desk, so I had to tell it to go away. When I tell her, you know,
Lady in the
by
tube.
That name. That's right. To do something, and then it happens, and it's talking to me like it's a human, and then it does the thing, like order me a Pizza Hut pizza. It's like, whoa, that was magic. But it's not really magic. It just seems like it's magic. Anyway, that's all for me this week. Derek, what do you have?
So I found this article on Gizmodo that dug up a new study saying that people everywhere think atheists are bad. So I start off by saying religion has played an important part in countless wars, conflicts, terrorist attacks, murders, and genocides, yet people seem to associate it with morality. In fact, even these same people, even other atheists, seem to think atheists are the immoral ones. So a new study from an international team of scientists tried to add some data to the moral distrust of atheists, which is a prejudice that exists in America and around the world. They surveyed 3,000 people from 13 different countries and found that anti-atheist prejudices still exist among religious people and other atheists alike in both religious and secular countries. Why do you guys think this is?
Okay, I actually... Anybody who's listened to a debate with any good presuppositionalist and Christopher Hitchens understands this concept really well, because Hitchens always totally misunderstands the transcendental argument, which says that morals only make sense if there is an objective moral standard given by a transcendental creator.
Mm-hmm.
And then he hears that and he's like, oh, so you're saying I can't be good unless I believe in God? And it's like, no, you totally missed the point, dude. And it's like, I'm not under any illusion that I'm smarter than Christopher Hitchens. I'm sure he's a million times smarter than I'll ever be, or was at least. But like, he totally whiffs on that one every single time.
Mm-hmm.
That is not the point. And just to correct a historical inaccuracy, it is not true that religiously motivated terrorism is more prevalent, or in the past has been more prevalent, than non-religiously motivated. If you add up the body count of, like, a Stalin, for example, and others like him, it's just as bad, if not much, much worse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. Mm. And it's not like we're arguing that religious people are better than non-religious people, because we're all wretches and sinners.
We're not arguing that at all.
Yeah. It's not
an
excuse.
Even though people hear us arguing that.
Yeah. It's not an excuse. It's just true that that none of us have any sort of goodness inside of us. But it does seem interesting that there's kind of this natural bent towards seeing an atheist worldview, which, if taken itself seriously, can't have a moral, can't have an objective basis for morality without borrowing from the Christian worldview, that it seems that they don't have a leg to stand on morally. So like, there's like this prejudice there. I don't know that that's helpful. I just find it interesting. But anyway.
Yeah, I think it's the root is, like, you don't have any epistemological warrant for doing good things. Nobody's saying that you can't, like, give to the poor or clothe the homeless or something that we would say is good. In fact, it's God's common grace that anyone who doesn't know him would do good, and they do good. But the reason, like, the point is, you don't have justification for it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, when we look at the Holocaust, we can say that's objectively wrong. No one should ever do it. It's the worst thing ever. Like, that's horrible, evil.
Mm-hmm.
But when you don't have a objective moral standard that is given by a transcendental creator, the revelation of a transcendental creator, you have to abandon the realm of ought. Like, you can't say someone ought to do this or ought to do that. You can't say someone should do this or should do that. You don't have a justification for it. That's the point.
Yep. Yep.
Why do you think this is probably most of the people that are described in this article that think atheists are... How does it phrase it? Are not good?
They seem to think atheists are the immoral ones. Oh, well, here's a great example. So the survey participants read about a boy who tortures animals, then murders and mutilates homeless people as an adult. They then answered questions about the man's religious beliefs in a way that the experimenters specifically designed, so folks weren't simply choosing whether the man was a believer or non-believer. Instead, some participants decided whether the man was a teacher in general, or specifically a teacher who believed in God, and the others decided whether the man was a teacher or specifically an atheist teacher. That was the scenario.
So I was just wondering, like, why do you guys think people tend towards that? Like, have they thought through that concept of atheists have no moral ground to stand on for deciding the ought and the should, or do they just have, like, I'm just wondering what does the common person think that may not listen to apologetics on a regular basis? Why do they still think that?
Tank, are you saying I listen to apologetics on a regular basis? That's the sweetest thing you've ever said to me. Thanks, man.
A lot more regular than I am.
Oh my goodness.
I'm just wondering what you guys think on why they have that worldview.
That's a good question. I haven't existed in that mind space for a while because I do listen to a lot of apologetics on a regular basis. But I don't know. That's a good question. Ben, do you have any thoughts?
Well, I'd like to think that some of it is from experience. Derek's right. Like, we Christians, we're not claiming that we're better people. In fact, you know, like Paul, sometimes some of us, I think, can rightly say, Jesus Christ came into the world to save sinners, of whom I'm the foremost. Like, I don't think of myself as better than anyone. I think of myself as worse than everyone I know, because I am very familiar with my own sins, and I don't know yours. And so I'm not sitting here claiming that I'm better than you. At the same time, though, the grace of God works through us such that Jesus can say things like, it's by your love for one another that people will know you're my disciples. And Jesus says things like, hopefully people will, or he doesn't say hopefully, he says people will look on your good works and glorify your Father who's in heaven. And so hopefully some of it is experience that religious people, Christians, do better things sometimes. I would hope that's part of it. I'm sure it's not all of it, but I guess you could maybe argue that the reverse is true. Maybe they have experience with non-religious people doing bad things. I don't know. There certainly are a lot of people who claim to be religious and do terrible things, which would seem to skew in the other way.
Yeah.
I wonder if there's also, like, just in some sense, the Christian, if this was centered around America, and I don't know, who all was studied in this, but, you know, just the Christian worldview and the Christian teachings have at least, I know a lot of people think the way that Christians go to heaven is that they are good people. And so therefore, a person who's not doing good things isn't trying to go to heaven and therefore isn't the person who tortures animals. So maybe people just have a little bit of Christian understanding to know that at least we want to be good people. And so therefore think that if someone's not being a good person, then they must not be a Christian. So maybe it's just kind of that worldview that has disseminated unto America, I guess. I don't know.
Tank, as our resident missionary, I'd love to put a question to you, both in my own experience and in the videos I watch online all the time, as you rightly pointed out. I find that people very commonly, when I present the core Christian message, the gospel of Jesus Christ, they will respond with, basically, I'm a good person, and I will go be with God in heaven because I'm a good person. Have you found that to be true?
Yeah, I feel like the people who accept that they're not Christians will think that being a good person goes to heaven, and so yes, they'd say if there happens to be a God, then I'm a good enough person that I think He'll let me in.
Because, for example, I'm not as bad as Hitler. That's one that I hear a lot. would you set the record straight for us again as our resident missionary expert? Could you tell us actually what is the core Christian message and why we're not saying that it's about being a good person? What are we saying if we're not saying that?
Yeah, sure. I think we have to look at what is God's standard. You know, so whenever we say good, either man can define good, or we can let the person who's going to be doing the judging define the good. What God says is that you have to be perfect as He is perfect. And so how do we define perfect? Well, you know, we look at one simple way to look at it is the Ten Commandments, which most people tend to know. And so it says things like, don't lie. And, well, everybody's lied, so we're not perfect. It says, don't commit adultery. And he defines adultery as lusting after any woman in your heart, which, or man, of course. And therefore, we've all committed adultery. And, et cetera, like don't envy, don't worship anyone other than him. And all of these things, all people have done. And essentially, it's even worse than that. It's not that just we've done these simple acts, but that we're all in a constant state of rebellion, that we have no desire to follow him. And so it's not just these one-off acts. It is the one-off acts, but it's also our very nature, that our very nature is in rebellion. We're not on his side. We're his enemy. And so therefore, when we get to heaven and he's judging us, he's going to see all of these acts that prove that our nature is in rebellion against him. And he's going to punish us for our rebellion against him. And the only hope we have is not that we can do enough good, because good doesn't replace evil. And what we've already said, that our natural state is rebellion against him. And so our only hope is Jesus, who was not in rebellion against God, who lived a perfect life. And when he died, he paid the punishment, he paid the penalty that all of us deserve for all of the rebellion that we've done. And if we believe in him, and we believe that he rose again from the dead, then we receive his righteousness. We're forgiven of everything. And when we stand before God, we no longer, God no longer looks at us and says, sees all the wrong things we've done. He looks at us and sees Jesus' perfect life.
Woo!
That's some good news.
Yeah. Our sponsor this week is Mission Aware, your Reformed theology gift shop. They've got fun and useful things to broadcast your faith and display your Reformed nerdery for the world to see. They've got beautiful designs with quotes, creeds, faces of various reformers available for printing across a variety of items, including clothing, journals, drinkware, posters, much more. Mission Aware has been creating things for over 6 years, and they've grown an impressive library of designs and items that will appeal to any theologian, whether you've just started discovering our history or whether you've been a theology nerd for years. Check them out at missionalware.com. That's missionalware.com to get your lifestyle on mission to the glory of God. And thanks to them for sponsoring this week of Tech Reformation. All right, Tank, what do you have for us this week?
So this week I brought an article about the app Ulysses, switching to the subscription model instead of, I believe it was, yeah, instead of just like a pay once model and you have it forever. Do you either of you guys know what Ulysses is, slash have you used it before?
I think I've used it before. There was a time that I went through text editing applications to try to figure out what I liked, and then I didn't decide on anything. And now I just use text edit. So, yeah.
I have not used it, but I think it's a text editor for writers specifically. Yeah. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, cool.
Yep. Yeah, I've never used it because it's not on Android or PC. And also probably because it costs, so I tend not to buy apps very often. I do buy apps sometimes, but anyway. But yeah, it's basically, the gist of it is what you guys said, that it's a text editor and it's really popular. And I'm sure you guys would love it if you tried it, just with how popular it is. But the main thing I want to focus on is the subscription model that it switched to. They wrote, the article linked in the show notes is their explanation for why they switched to subscription models. And I think, I think that's a pretty controversial move to make and can easily upset a lot of people. And understandably, I've never been a huge fan, I guess, of the subscription model. Like, man, why are everybody switching to this? And but their article made a very good case for why they've switched to this. And I really appreciated their argument. So I wanted to put forth just a few of the high points of it, and then see what you guys think. So first, they stated that you know, they've been thinking about it for 2 years, so it wasn't a really easy one. Like, we want to make more money. We can do it through subscription. Yeah, let's do it. Instead, been 2 years, and they kind of walked the readers first through the history of software purchases, and they pointed out, you know, most software before you could update directly on the App Store, you know, they would put out a release and make it really good, and then everyone would buy that release, And then a year later, 2 years later, they'd put out another release. This is just any software maker. They'd put out another release. Everyone would go buy the update. And so they're spending the same amount of money multiple times to buy the update. Well, now that we're in this method of we can update on the fly, you know, you don't have to go buy a new physical copy to update. They've switched it to where you're only, if how Ulysses's model was, you bought Ulysses once and you got all these updates that used to, you had to repay for in history. Now you never have to pay for them. Yeah. And so what they say in the article, they make this statement. It says, let's map this onto Ulysses for a moment. If you bought Ulysses at its launch in April 2013, you will now have received 9 major feature releases for free at no additional cost. At least 80% of that originally purchased app has since been scrapped and replaced. Its functionality has quadrupled during the same time. And so that's kind of the foundation for their argument, and then stating that, you know, they're in this loop of we have to do an update because updates give us new customers, and then we disappear into oblivion again until our next update. That's the only way we can get new customers. And these customers are constantly dwindling, you know, because every update we get a new batch of people, but there's the world, I guess, isn't procreating fast enough to really make this a sustainable model. So the real ultimate solution to still be able to provide quality updates to its customers, especially with iPhone updates and stuff, to stay on top of everything and be able to support all of their employees and support the business, is a subscription model. And they kind of talk about, they put some graphs and charts in there and make more of an argument, but that's too many details. You're welcome to read the rest of the article if you like. So yeah, what do you, Ben and Derek, what do you guys think about switching to subscription model?
So I personally, I have mixed feelings as a consumer because I don't like paying for things regularly.
Yep.
But at the same time, the market's going to work itself out with this sort of thing. And there's always alternatives for those of us who don't want to pay subscriptions. There was a conversation on this several weeks ago in the Slack when this whole thing happened. My comment on it was that a lot of these apps that are moving to subscription may find that they end up becoming more niche, and they're just not as popular anymore, but they're more financially able to continue, which is good for them. You know, that's great. And other people can find other things that don't want to buy them. It is an interesting evolution of software, though, over the past decade and a half, where there was like a glory period for software in the mid-aughts, where there were a lot of third parties making killer software that were great alternatives for the big companies at like a fraction of the price. And of course, like Adobe at this point was selling their software for hundreds of dollars, upwards of $1,000 for like their whole suite. So they had to bring their prices down in order to compete, which works well at the subscription model. Adobe was kind of the first pioneer in the subscription model, which worked great for them. And all these smaller companies that have built up their base over the course of a decade are now doing pretty well. They're hiring more people, so they need more regular income. They're starting to mature, so they kind of need to raise their prices to a subscription model, something like that. So I think we're going to find that software starts rising out of the prosumer level into more the professional level, and then we'll get more consumer software down here. And that's just, there's just going to be a flux here for, you know, over the next 5 years, I think. I think we'll see a lot more people going subscription-based, and I think we'll see a lot more free or cheap alternatives that perhaps don't do as much, but perhaps you can get the same effect with multiple pieces of software.
Yeah, there's a reason that software as a service as a business model has taken off really in the last decade. I don't know how long it's been. And, you know, I think other models, as Ulysses has pointed out, just weren't sustainable. And so I am, you know, it's interesting that you mentioned the two kinds of consumer of users there, Derek, the pro consumer and then the professional. And then maybe the chasm between them widening. I almost see the chasm having shrunk quite a bit in recent memory, where the expectation of the average consumer, I guess since the iPhone, I don't know, has really skyrocketed. And so we expect so much from our technology. We expect it to perform seamlessly and to do everything we could possibly ever think of. And so the cost of app development has skyrocketed, you know, to compete with that, to meet the demand. And so now all these companies, these software companies are having to rethink, how do we fund all this stuff in order to continue to provide for our users? And it's tricky. I don't have an easy answer for such a complex solution. I feel like the market, in terms of, you know, the capitalistic economy that we're in, you know, the market's going to sort of correct itself as time goes by, and you're going to see maybe, like Derek said, you'll see the chasm sort of divide again as people sort of plateau on what it makes sense for app development to cost for something at the consumer level. And I think in general, that's probably a good thing. I've thought about this from sort of an opposite side of this coin, where you have businesses driven by, I mean, I think the biblical word for it is greed. How can we make as much money as possible with as little effort as possible? I don't see that as what Ulysses is doing, but I unfortunately do see that a lot in sort of the business capitalistic society that we live in. And it just makes me really sad. Something that I think about in my own life is how often I even talk or think about money, because I don't want to love money. Money's a bad master. And I can only have one master anyway. Otherwise I'll, love the one and hate the other, as Jesus said. And so if you just think practically throughout maybe a day or a week, how often do I think or speak about money? Like, when somebody tells me about this cool new thing that they just got, is my first question, oh, how much did that cost? And for me, it's often, how much did that cost? And I frankly don't want that to be the case anymore. And so it's just this slow battle with at least temptation, if not sin at times, that by the power of the Spirit, I want to be killing before it kills me.
Yeah, like Ben said, that Ulysses's mindset doesn't seem to be a purely greedy one, that they are, they in many ways did consider the consumer. And I think, and reading their side of it, yeah, has helped me to see, that at least I can see where companies are coming from when they switch to subscription model, and that, yeah, helped me change my view on it. And so hopefully, if anyone else had never really thought about it and just thought about, the downsides of it, hopefully that has helped you see it in a new light.
And if you would like to connect with us, you can do so by jumping in our Slack team. Sign up at slack.techreformation.com, and it's free.
And as always, we have a Twitter that you can subscribe to and talk to, and we will read it and respond and all that good stuff. So check us out at Tech Reformation.
Feel free to visit our website, too, at techreformation.com.
Yeah, we never mentioned it, but we totally redid our website probably like a month and a half back at this point. So it looks nice. You should go check it out.
By we, do we mean you, Derek?
Yeah. Yes. Yes, I mean me.
We love
Derek. Derek is the heart of Tech Reformation. He pumps blood to all of us otherwise lame organs and keeps the thing afloat.
Yes, sure. Okay, thank you.
And if you're still listening to this and you have a moment, would you please do me a solid? Because it would be really dope if you would open up that Apple Podcasts app, go out there to Tech Reformation, and rate and review us. Give us 5 stars and tell someone about how great Tech Reformation is. I mean, if you're still listening, you might as well obey this command, right? 5 stars and some words that say about how great we are. I don't see, that's not hard.
No problem with that whatsoever. Nope. Sounds good.
You don't have to do that. But it does help us a lot if you'll rate and review us. So if you like the show, please head over there and do that. This has been Tech Reformation. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week. And I ain't looking back. No, no, I ain't looking back. No, no, I ain't looking back. No, 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 I ain't looking back. I made my choice, and I ain't looking back. Derek, cut this out.
Yes, you, Derek. I know you're listening. Wake up. That's sometimes
Derek, you gorgeous man, you. You cut this out, okay? You hear me? I'm gonna regret that one.
That's going in the end. I'm sorry, Tank. Continue.